You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello everyone, you are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and as promised, I am back with the Barry Morphew arrest affidavit episode. Today has been an absolutely insane day with news. We had the FBI raid Brian Laundrie's parents' house, execute a search warrant, take out a hard drive, take in and possess that silver Mustang. We had a Chad Daybell hearing as well. And then probably the big news, and the one that I spoke to earlier, is that Barry Morphew, guys, he paid the $500,000 cash bond and he's out. He went home. We're going to discuss that here momentarily, but first, let's get some housekeeping out of the way. First, you can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media accounts, Patreon, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Send us an email if you want, case request, questions, complaint, compliment, whatever you see fit, as well as our Patreon. Or you can go directly there at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. If you're loving the show, liking the show, and want to financially back it and get some cool stuff in return, you can do that. And don't forget to go to WSDLove.com. If you're liking the show and you want some free shit, go there. Fill out a really quick submission. And if you would spend just 20 seconds leaving a 5-star review on iTunes, you actually get an extra submission. At the end of the month, I'll pick one person and send you free shit. And I plan to have a lot of fun with this, guys. So make sure you don't miss out on that. All right, so let's get into the Barry Morphew news today, guys. He paid the freaking $500,000. Now, I'm not going to speculate where he got that money from. However, what people do know is that Suzanne Morphew did inherit a lot of money, over $500,000. And so people are speculating and thinking that he used Suzanne Morphew's own money to pay his cash bond. Unsure if that is true or valid, but I can think of probably nothing more disgusting than that, if that is actually the case. I also caution you to look at the news today because I almost lost my lunch. I almost vomited when I saw him leaving the prison with his two daughters. And that's something that's always just, I've never understood it. Say, for example, Chad Daybell's family, all the information that is publicly available now, it's that pretty apparent that your dad orchestrated or influenced or had something to do with the demise of these two children. Well, guys, Barry Morphew, I think it was pretty much 90-10 favor that he probably murdered Suzanne. And today that arrest affidavit was released, which I've been pouring through for hours now. And let me just say, it's pretty much like 99-1 that Barry Morphew murdered Suzanne. I cannot fathom the pressure or the emotion behind having your parents, someone that you love a lot, respect, be accused of killing your own mother. I mean, I can't imagine the emotions that run behind that. It doesn't make it any less shocking to see them lovingly embrace and, you know, Barry out there smiling, clean shaven and running to his daughters. It doesn't make it any less just bizarre. So the arrest affidavit was released, and guys, it is a freaking doozy. It's like 139 pages, and we're actually going to go over this together with complete highlights section by section. Now, the affidavit breaks down the synopsis of this case into 6 sections within the report, within the affidavit. 1, initial scene and interviews. 2, Suzanne's affair and her attempts to leave Barry. 3, Barry's statements to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation from May through June of 2020. 4, evidence recovered by law enforcement. 5, witness statements. And 6, Barry's statements to the FBI in 2021, where he describes what happened to Suzanne when he was shown evidence in the case. The first 2 pages of this arrest affidavit pretty much summarizes everything. Quote, Suzanne took clear, articulable steps in January 2020 in attempts to separate from and divorce her husband, Barry. She told her family and close friends about her intentions, secretly recorded her notes of abuse in her phone because Barry monitored it. confronted Barry in arguments that she secretly recorded with help from a friend, and finally sent him a text 4 days before she disappeared saying that she was, quote, done, let's handle this civilly. It then summarizes basically Barry's lies. So let's just go over this. So on page 2, we now know that Suzanne first messaged Jeff Libler on Facebook in 2018. She said, howdy, stranger. And this was in 1 month of Barry moving them and their children to Colorado. Suzanne and Jeff Libler met up with each other in 2019 for the first time, with Suzanne traveling to meet him in New Orleans. They also met up in Indianapolis, Dallas, Michigan, and Florida, and at some point along here, their relationship turned sexual. Now, it's reported that by September of 2019, Barry realized or sensed that it was likely that Suzanne was having an affair and began to stalk Suzanne around their home. And this was witnessed directly by Suzanne's best friend, Sheila Oliver. Now, in previous episodes and also in the preliminary hearing, you may recall Sheila Oliver. She was Suzanne's best friend in the entire world. They spoke daily, texted constantly, and Sheila, definitely not a fan of Barry. But Sheila is a crucial witness in this case, and you may recognize her name from The Spy Pen. So Barry became ultra controlling. He attempted to take Suzanne's phone from her during a trip to Mexico in January of 2019. And he, at that point, saw her conversation with Jeff Libler, but didn't realize it was Jeff Libler. Remember, all of them went to school together. All of them went to high school together. So they all knew each other, and they all went their own separate ways, with Jeff being back in Michigan. On May 8th of 2020, Suzanne wrote in the notes section of her phone that Barry accused her of having a boyfriend 2 days before on May 6th. Now, just 3 days after Barry accused her of having an affair, she disappeared. And again, it has been confirmed too that the last proof of life occurred around 2 p.m. when she sent Jeff Libler a selfie, the one of her sunbathing on the deck. Suzanne did not respond to any of Jeff's messages at 2:44 and 2:46 p.m. that day, and this coincides with the time frame where Barry Morphew admitted to running around the house with a gun in his hand hunting chipmunks. And right before that, he put his phone into airplane mode at just 2:47 p.m. And guys, that's just 1 minute after Jeff's final text to Suzanne. So the introduction of the affidavit is kind of just a grand overview of saying, look, Suzanne was having an affair. Barry Morphew suspected it. Suzanne went missing. And here's his behavior the day the investigation began up until basically January. And then it gets cut out into those sections. So section one, the initial scene. So on May 10th, 2020 at 5:58 p.m., the CCSO deputy Damon Brown was notified by dispatch to call a Martin Ritter about a possible missing person who also has cancer. Her name was Suzanne Morphew, and her husband was driving back from Denver but didn't have cell service. Now, don't forget, we know that, in fact, at this time, Barry Morphew was sitting inside of his hotel room in Broomfield with full cell service. Martin Ritter told the deputy that one of Suzanne's daughters called him concerned because she could not reach her mom. And the Ritters are neighbors of the Morphews. They went over to the home, but they couldn't find her. So Martin called Barry. And Barry told him that he couldn't reach Suzanne either. In turn, Barry told Martin to call 911 and said that he was on his way home from Denver, which, again, lie. Martin Ritter advised that Suzanne had gone missing between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. that morning. So Deputy Brown's report on that day, it details reports from deputies and sergeants and officers who responded to different parts of the investigation, whether crime scene, the initial intake, like the initial report, or also interrogations. So Deputy Brown's report on that day, he tried to call Barry numerous times without success, but finally got a hold of Barry at 7:10 p.m. Barry told him that the last time he saw Suzanne was at 5 a.m. that morning when he got up to go to work. She was asleep. He then said that she had recently picked up mountain biking and went almost daily. He correctly described her helmet and even provided the color, which is turquoise, but did not describe her windbreaker that she typically wore. He also provided Deputy Brown with her phone number. Deputy Brown and CCSO Sergeant Lamine Molnax, pardon me if I'm butchering that, Molnax, drove to Morphew's home at 7:31 looking along the shoulder of the road. And the Morphews lived way up in the mountains, so along the shoulder of the road to their home is a very, very, very steep incline. Deputy Brown and Sergeant Molnax spotted a blue mountain bike at the bottom of the hill with the front tire pointing downwards. So they stopped their car, they got out, they investigated it, and immediately noted that there was no evidence of a crash whatsoever. The vegetation around it wasn't crushed, no limbs, bushes, anything like that pressed down. There was no blood, no bike parts, no damage to the bike whatsoever. They immediately noticed that the handlebars were turned completely to the left, which what that does is it locks the front brake pad and causes the brake cables to wrap around the bike frame. And that was interesting to them because there were no braking or skid marks near the bike. So there was also no damage to the rim or spokes. Deputy Brown wrote in his report, quote, "After all of these observations, I started to question if something criminal had occurred, as it looked like the bike was purposely thrown in this location." And at this point, the boyfriend of one of the Morphew daughters and his father, Michael Harvey, arrived at the residence and everyone went inside. They also started to search around the immediate property and they were all calling for Suzanne. It was noted that there was no forced entry to the home at all, and everything was neat except for the guest bedroom in which the bedding was stripped. Deputy Brown went into the master bedroom and immediately discovered a .22 caliber round of ammunition. Under the bed was a rifle storage case. In the main floor and foyer area of a storage closet, Deputy Brown observed a reddish-brown substance that was smeared midway on the side of the closet wall. Then we have Sergeant Molnack's reports. He said that he overheard Barry tell Deputy Brown that Suzanne usually rode her bike from 8 to 9 a.m. And so they went back to inspect the bike, and they turned on their chest cams. Immediately, Sergeant Molnack remarked that the bike seemed completely out of place there. And continuing their search, they called for Suzanne for a couple hundred yards and then had dispatch verify that she was not in any of the local hospitals, which obviously she was not. So Sergeant Molnack stays with the bike while Deputy Brown moves on up the road. Sergeant Molnack then gave dispatch Suzanne's cell phone number, and they informed him that the cell phone appeared to be turned off and that its last known activity was at 4:23 a.m. that morning, about 11 and a half miles west of a cell tower in Pontchartrain Springs, Colorado. Which, that was really interesting too, that within just mere minutes, they can get last call, last activity. So as Sergeant Molnack was standing there, the boyfriend came back, and he did in fact confirm that it was one of Suzanne's bikes. Around 8:42 p.m., Barry arrives at the home in his truck by himself. He walked up to the bike, touched it, and then also verified that it was Suzanne's. Then we have a sergeant, and please correct me, guys, this is a rough one, and I haven't seen it pronounced anywhere. Sergeant Hisjulian? Well, the boyfriend told him that Barry and Suzanne argued frequently and advised that he is the one who got her into mountain biking. He said that she was an intermediate rider. The boyfriend then also went through the house. He spent a considerable amount of time there and said that nothing was amiss except for stripped off bedding because one of the Morphew daughters does not live at the home full time. She's in college. Sergeant Molnack then spoke to one of Suzanne's daughters who had last spoken to her the night before on May 9th. She also sent her mom a text wishing her a happy Mother's Day, but Suzanne never replied. This daughter confirmed Suzanne's mountain biking attire, saying that she bikes only in the afternoon hours using a very wide trail across the highway, which again completely goes against what Barry Morphew had told officers. She says that she always takes her cell phone, her sunglasses, a backpack, and a hydration or camelback. When Sergeant Molnack asked this daughter if there were any concerns about her parents' relationship, she said there were none. She denied any events or conflicts whatsoever. And then we have the May 11th interviews with various different people. May 11th was spent interviewing a handful of people close to Barry and Suzanne. So Sergeant Hisjulian spoke with multiple people. Their names are all redacted, but he did confirm the following information. Number one, Suzanne was a very meticulous note taker. She wrote religious devotionals in a journal. She wrote a lot of notes on her phone. She did pros and cons lists. She was a very, very big person who was into writing things down. Suzanne's bed is always made, and her sheets and pillowcases are blue. Her comforter is brown, like brownish red. The other Morphew daughter said that her parents argued a lot and that they were, quote, not doing well. She believed that it would be the best for them to get divorced and that neither one of her parents were in a safe place emotionally, especially with each other. And she admitted that her parents frequently discussed divorce. And when Sergeant Hisjulian spoke with his daughter, he asked her, you know, what if Suzanne left because she didn't feel safe with Barry? And she said, my mom would never leave us. She knew, like, you know, if she did, she would immediately call and let her and her sister know. In the early morning of May 11th, 2020, CCSO Detective Burgess interviewed Barry Morphew himself. This is the story. He gave the story that we've all heard already. He says he left at 5 a.m. for a job in Broomfield. He said he didn't speak to Suzanne, but did see her, that she was sleeping. He said that he and his daughters tried to contact Suzanne multiple times throughout the day, as it was Mother's Day, and could not get a hold of her. He then provided his route of travel to Broomfield and never said that he turned west on Highway 50. Now, remember that fact because it does become important later. He also said that Suzanne's plan for the day was to clean the house and get the spare bedrooms ready for their daughters to come home from their road trip, the one that they were on. He told law enforcement about his gun cache and claimed that it was locked in a gun safe in the garage. But on a tour of the house, officers found a high-powered rifle in the closet on the first floor. And there was also a Benelli 12-gauge shotgun lying against the wall in the garage. And don't forget about that .22 caliber rifle cartridge that was found in the bedroom near Suzanne's side of the bed. Also worth noting in the affidavit is that neither side of the bed had a phone charger attached to it, which is interesting that that was highlighted and asterisked. Information there is that neither side had a phone charger attached to the wall outlet. After the interview was over, which it was obviously very brief, very generic information, Barry was told that his truck was going to be seized in order to process it. And on May 13th, search teams located Suzanne's helmet. Inside of it, officers found a piece of paper on which she had scribbled down hers and Barry's names, address, and phone numbers. And the truck. The CBI actually processed both Barry's truck and Suzanne's Range Rover. The note regarding the interior on Barry's truck says, quote, "The interior of the truck was cluttered with several personal items. The interior dash was dusty and dirty." The notes on Suzanne's Range Rover said, quote, "There were personal items, including Suzanne's driver's license and credit cards, throughout the vehicle. There were also random items, though, including her sunglasses and a Camelback," which indicates, you know, the two items that she always took with her mountain biking. It probably speaks to the fact that she did not go mountain biking. And like I said, this is going to be a really quick episode because I wanted to get cleared with section one before we go into section two. Again, this affidavit is 129 pages long, with the vast majority and some of the longest information being in section two, with basically the abuse, Barry and Suzanne's relationship. And what's so incredibly sad is that the abuse was so much deeper and worse than had previously been confirmed. And a lot of it actually comes from her own hand, I guess, what, typed notes on her phone. This section, section two, also details her attempts to leave him, as well as her affair with Jeff Libler. And we've learned a lot from this particular section, from section two, as far as her relationship with Jeff and what her relationship was like with Barry at this time, and some of her reasons for even seeking out this affair. So I know this one's a really, really short episode. Just wanted to get section one out of the way. Section two is going to be a long one. So strap in for the next episode, guys. It's going to be a pretty lengthy one, and we are going to continue going through this arrest affidavit. And then I want to know, for those of you who have read the affidavit, if you sat, you know, had some free time today and sat down and read the whole thing, did this change your opinion of Barry Morphew at all? Did it make you more or less sure of his guilt? And furthermore, how do you feel about him paying $500,000 in cash and that he's back at home with his family? Definitely want to know what you think. That is it for section one of Barry Morphew's arrest affidavit. Again, section two coming tomorrow, and it's going to be a doozy, guys. Until next crime.